This morning I'm continuing a series that I'm doing in November here on stewardship called Pay It Forward. And we're going to be continuing to look at all the ways that God has called us to be stewards, to be generous in how he has blessed us and what he's given for us and what that means for our lives. So today I'm going to be reading a story that comes from the Gospel of Matthew. It's from the Gospel of Matthew 25, and I'm going to be starting at verse 14, one of the parables that Jesus tells, the parable of the bags of gold, sometimes also referred to as the parable of the talents. So it goes like this. Again, it will be like a man going on a journey who has called his servants and entrusted his wealth to them. To one he gave 5 bags of gold, to another 2 bags, and to another 1 bag, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The man who had received 5 bags of gold went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 more bags. So also the one with 2 bags of gold gained 2 more. But the man who had received 1 bag went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who had received 5 bags of gold brought the other 5. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 5 bags of gold. See, I have gained 5 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. The man with 2 bags of gold also came. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 2 bags of gold. See, I have gained 2 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Then the man who had received 1 bag of gold came. Master, he said, I knew that you are a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid and went out and hid your gold in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you. His master replied, you wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gathered where I do not scatter seed. Well then, you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. So take the bag of gold from him and give it to the one who has 10 bags. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. We began this stewardship series last week, and I began with Psalm 24, and we began with a simple phrase that the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. We began this series of stewardship by remembering all the ways that God has blessed us, and that we don't own any of it, but that God has given it to us as something to be a caretaker for his creation, a steward of his creation for him. Today, we keep moving forward in that, looking at what it means for us to be stewards with what God has given us and what that looks like. And we're using this parable then as an example of what that looks like in our lives. The parable of the talents, or the parable of the bags of gold, as it is sometimes called. So let's take a look at this and figure out what this means for us, how this tells us something about how we are stewards of what God has given to us. First, a few things about this parable itself. Let me back up and give sort of the 30,000-foot view. This is a parable that we took from the Gospel of Matthew. Matthew, one of the 4 Gospels that we have in our Bible. It's not the only place this story occurs. There is a very similar story to this one in the Gospel of Luke chapter 19. But if you were to do a study of this and look at them, you would quickly figure out that those stories, even though they look similar, are actually very different. Different audiences, a different time when Jesus told it, a different context around which it is. Whenever I see something like that happen in the Gospels, where there are these parallel stories that don't really line up, but they sort of each have their own unique place, it's cause for me to say, all right, what is that Gospel writer doing with this story? And that's the case here in Matthew. What is Matthew doing with this particular story? What's his intention? What is he after in telling this story of Jesus, the way that he tells it and where he tells it? It's a good reminder for us today. So the Gospel of Matthew. Matthew writes his gospel to a particularly Jewish audience. different from some of the other Gospels. Luke, for example, writes his Gospel to a Greek audience, to the Gentiles. But Matthew writes to the Christians who are Jewish. So Matthew writes to Christians who knew their Old Testament, and they knew it well because they were raised and trained within that. That's important to note. Important to note because Matthew arranges his Gospel in a way that speaks to those people who knew their Old Testament. In particular, those if you think of those Jewish people who lived at that time, they knew their Torah, their law, the law that came from the books of Moses, right? Those first five books of the Bible, sometimes called the Pentateuch, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. The law that they followed comes from those. Matthew then writes to that audience, and the way that Matthew arranges his Gospel resonates with that. In fact, if you were to take the entire book of Matthew and break it down and look at all the ways that Jesus is presented in there, what you find is that Matthew takes all of the teachings of Jesus and he clusters them in five places in his Gospel. Five discourses, teachings of Jesus. And these five teachings, these discourses of Jesus, echo the Torah, right? The first five books of the Bible. If the Torah, the law of God that's given to the Old Testament people of Israel, is meant to be something that conveys or communicates God's covenant relationship to his people, then Matthew wants to make it obviously clear that Jesus is a communication, a revelation of God's covenant relationship to his people. He's bridging that gap with Jesus. That's all background information on Matthew, and it's helpful. Helpful because it helps us to see where this goes in this story that we find today. Whenever I read a story of Jesus out of Matthew, the first thing that I always do is back off and say, all right, where does this fit in Matthew's telling of Jesus, of those five different teachings or discourses that Matthew gives? Where does this story fit? We read this from chapter 25. It comes towards the end of Matthew's Gospel. It's in the fifth one, the last of those discourses, those teachings that Jesus gives. And in that gives us a little hint. A hint by saying, all right, what's going on in that last section, that last teaching section that Matthew gives? There's a theme, an overarching theme to all of those teachings, those stories that tie together. And this one's no different. So in chapter 25 of Matthew, when you read that fifth teaching discourse, Jesus has a focus in those teachings on what's ahead, looking ahead. Some of the stories that you find in that teaching section are where Jesus talks about being ready for what God is bringing. There's some discussion there of the end times, of what's coming next, of what it will be like at the end time. And then there's this cluster of parables that all focus upon that theme of what it means to live now as someone who's ready for what Jesus is about to unveil or bring or do next, of what's looking ahead. All those stories do that. So if you were to look at some of those others, and we didn't read all those stories, right? We just read this one parable. But the other surrounding stories go something like this. At the end of chapter 24, there's the parable of two servants. The two servants who are responsible for their master's household. And it's a parable teaching on responsibility. What it means to have responsibility as you look to what Jesus is doing next. At the beginning of chapter 25 is the parable of the 10 virgins, a parable that focuses on readiness, what it means to be ready for what God is about to do or bring next. And then at the end of chapter 24, further than what we read, is the parable of the sheep, or of chapter 25, is the parable of the sheep and the goats, a parable that talks about accountability, what it means to be accountable with what God is doing and bringing next. And sandwiched right in the middle of that is the story we read today, the parable of the bags of gold, or the parable of the talents, a parable that focuses on productivity, what it means to be productive in the time that we have now, looking forward to what Jesus is bringing next. It's looking ahead. That's important to note. Important to note because We began last week with that phrase from Psalm 24, the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. We began last week by talking about stewardship as something in which we have to remind ourselves, right? Remember all that we have comes from God. Remember that we have all been blessed by God. It began with a view of stewardship that sort of turns around and looks backward, looks back at all the blessings that God has given to us. But now today, we're looking at a story about stewardship that does a complete 180. It doesn't look backwards, but now we're looking forwards. It's a view of stewardship that looks ahead. So what does that look like? A couple things about the parable itself, okay? When we see how this parable goes, first, there's a wealthy landowner, a master, who divides up a portion of his property, gives it among some of his servants, and then goes away on a journey. He comes back. The first two servants all give a return for what they've had, right? So one servant has five talents or five bags of gold. He puts that to work doing something, producing something, and produces five more. He doubles it. And then the second servant, who receives two bags of gold, two talents, does the same thing. Puts it to work, gets a return, and he doubles it. And the master comes back and they receive back what was given by what they've shared and done with what the master has given to them. Now, the amounts here are not necessarily the important thing. The point of the story is the doubling, that they have doubled what they've been given. And the point of doubling tells us, it communicates to us that they used what they were given to its fullest potential. Right? So it's not the actual amount that matters, but the illustration there is one that shows whatever it is that they have, whatever resources they've been given, whatever talents they have, when they used it to their fullest potential, Jesus illustrates that in this story by saying it's doubled, that they double what they have. So that's the first two servants that you see. Then comes the third servant, the one who does nothing with what he's given. The talent that he receives, the one bag of gold that he receives, he takes and he buries in the ground and hides it away. He does not use what is given. And when the master returns, even though he gives it back to him, right, he didn't spend it on himself, he didn't squander it, he just didn't use it. He hid it away. And the master then calls him out for that. That's not the reason I gave that to you. That's not the reason that you had that. That's not the reason for the gift, for you to just hang on to it, hide it away, not do anything with it. Instead, he buries it. There's a lesson for us in that, a lesson in what it means for us to have been given something by God, a treasure, but then bury it away instead of use it. Use it to its fullest potential, as given by God. There's a barrier that gets in the way. It got in the way for this third servant. And I think if we begin to dig into that and talk about that, what we discover and what we will discover here is that, you know what? That's a barrier that gets in the way for us too. And it's maybe not what we think it is. In fact, maybe when we think about generosity, I think about generosity in a way where, you know what? I do share, I give, I know that I've been blessed by God, and I find ways of giving that, so I think I can check that box off. But what we're talking about in stewardship goes beyond generosity. In stewardship, where we see and are faced with the question here today, am I using what God has given me to the fullest potential of what God has given, the potential that's there? What does that look like? How does that take shape in my lives? And what are the barriers that get in the way? The barrier that maybe I don't even recognize is there or won't even acknowledge. So let's look at that. Let's look at what this third servant who buries his treasure does and see where that may have something for us today and what we do with our generosity. He gives an excuse, right? He has an explanation. The master calls him in, and he brings back the bag of gold, the one talent that he has, but he brings it back with an excuse, an explanation. We read about that in the passage today. He says this, "Master, I knew that you are a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown, gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid, and I went out and hid your gold in the ground. See, here's what belongs to you. A hard man, he says about him. It comes from the Greek word skleros, which in other English translations maybe is sometimes translated as harsh, hard or harsh. It carries the notion of being stubborn, unyielding, unrelenting, determined. That's what's going on behind the word here. That's what this third servant is projecting upon the master. You are unyielding and unrelenting. That you are so determined in how you go about things. And I knew that about you. That's what the servant is projecting as his excuse, his explanation for why he did not do something with what he was given. Now, there can be different ways to interpret this, right? So some biblical scholars will look at the example that's given there, right? You've scattered, so you've harvested where you have not scattered seed. You've reaped where you have not sown. Some biblical scholars may look at that and they say, well, maybe Matthew's giving a nod here to the message of the gospel, that God is bringing his message of salvation outside of the boundaries of the nation of Israel, right? That he's harvesting beyond the nation of Israel, where he had always, in the Old Testament prior to this, given his covenant. I don't know if I particularly buy that, and many scholars don't either, because it doesn't fit the point of the parable, right? It doesn't go along with where Matthew is placing this in his teachings to go in that direction. Maybe it's something much more basic, actually, much more simple. Maybe this servant was simply trying to point out from his own perspective that he looked at the master and said, it's not fair. It's not fair. That guy got 5 bags. That guy got 2 bags. I got 1. What's up with that? You bless those other people with so much. Yeah, of course they're going to give a return. You've given them so much to work with. Of course they're going to be generous. Look at all that they have. So much more than I have. You haven't given me what you gave them. Maybe that's what's going on here. That this third servant looks at what he's got and he says, I got the short end. Everyone else got more. And I just got the little one. That doesn't seem fair to me. So I'm just going to hang on to it. Because I have not received blessing the way they have received blessing, I'm just going to keep this one to myself. I'm just going to bury this one. I'm going to hold that back. It doesn't go into further explanation about what that looks like. And maybe it doesn't have to. Because maybe the point there in the parable is that this is the place where we, the readers, the listeners today, insert ourselves into the story. And maybe come to that same point. What are the points in my life, in every one of our lives, and we all do this. What are the points where I look at what I have and then I compare, right? I start comparing what I have to what everybody else has. And when I start comparing, of course, I'm always going to find myself comparing myself to people who look like they've got more. And when I start comparing myself to people who look like they've got more, then I start thinking it's not fair. It's not fair. They've had the easy life. They've got the easy road. They've got so much. And then it becomes a barrier, right? A barrier for my generosity with what I've been given when I start looking at it that way. So what does this third servant have to say about that? What's his result? What's his conclusion? His result is simply this, that he says to the master, so I was afraid. So I was afraid. Fear. Maybe not the barrier that we would immediately jump to when we think about generosity, when we think about stewardship, that the thing that short circuits or gets in the way of us being the generous people that God has called and blessed us to be, the thing that gets in the way is fear. But it does. Consider this. Consider the ways that this may look, that fear gets in the way. Fear of what? I mean, we could go in so many directions with this. I'm just going to highlight three this morning. Three ways that fear jumps in and gets in the way of stewardship, of our own generosity. One might be this, a fear of failure, that I'm afraid that I'm not going to make it. You know, back before I went to seminary, it's a second career move for me that I went to seminary later in life, because the thing that scared me to death about seminary was Greek and Hebrew language. You have to learn two foreign languages, and not just two foreign languages, but two foreign languages with completely different alphabets, so symbols and squiggles and things like that. I can't do that. I'm not going to go do that because I'm afraid I won't be able to. I'm afraid that I'll fail, that I'm not going to make it through. So I held back. I did pass those courses, by the way, right? Now, I know I'm never going to go on to be a professor of biblical languages. I'm not a five bags of gold kind of guy when it comes to understanding Greek and Hebrew. But you know what? I had something. I had something that got me through and did well enough to be able to pull through what I needed to do to get through to the other side and to use that even in today when I look and read Scripture to know what I'm looking at and reading and how to translate that and work with it. But for the longest time, there was a fear of failure that I wouldn't measure up to the standard that was there, so I held back. I didn't go. I didn't give. I didn't pursue that course. That has examples all over for us, doesn't it? That maybe there are opportunities that are placed before us of ways that we can be involved and use what God has given to us, but something short circuits that because somewhere along the line I think, but what if I can't do it? What if I don't measure up? So opportunities come, opportunities to be a mentor on our Tuesday night life skill class, to walk alongside of someone else through that process. Opportunities to teach a Bible study or lead a Sunday school class. Opportunities where there's nomination to serve on the council as an elder or as a deacon. And that nomination comes, and first I start thinking, you know, I've had such an awesome elder who's over my district before. Look at all the things that she's done to be an elder that provides so much. I can't do that. Not the way she does. She's a five bags of gold kind of an elder. I'm not. So because I can't measure myself up, I'm going to bury that, all right? I'm going to bury it. So instead of letting go and giving what God has given for us to be used, we bury it because I'm afraid I'm not going to measure up. There's a fear of failure. That's one. How about another one? How about a fear of the unknown, of what's coming, of what's next? When I lived in Kalamazoo, there was an old woman who lived in our community there, a woman who had been born and raised through the time of the Great Depression. So she lived growing up during a time when her family had very little. And then later on in life, her husband died and left her with very little as well. And she became a person who started to collect and hoard things in her home, because she was always afraid that she would run out, that she would never have enough, that she needed more. It got to the point where there was a group from our church that had to go and help her clean things out because her house was literally unsafe to live in. We had to rent dumpsters in the driveway to get rid of junk. You walk into her house and there's no kitchen counter space at all because everything is piled high with things on it that she had collected. Rooms in her house are filled. I don't mean just piles here and there, but I mean filled from floor to ceiling, from wall to wall, just piles of things. In her bedroom, there's a path from the door to the bed, and that's it, because everything else is just piles, piles of things that she had collected over and over again. So many of these things were things that had never been used, piles and piles of clothes that still had the tags on them, had never been worn, boxes and boxes of items that had never been opened. Some of these things that she had bought decades ago. This has been sitting here in a box for 20 years. How come you haven't used it? Well, but maybe someday. Maybe someday. collecting and collecting and hoarding onto all of these things because, not because I need it now, but what if I do someday, later? I don't know what's coming next, so I feel like I just need to grab and hang on to everything, that there's a fear of the unknown that gets in the way, so that when I start looking at all the things that I've received, all the ways that I've been blessed, I feel like I have to hang on to all of it because I'm afraid of what might happen if I let it go. Now, there is a sensible place for financial planning in this way, right? There is a sensible place to be able to meet with a professional or some kind of a financial counselor and say, you know what? What do I need for an adequate retirement? I'm going to use that word, adequate. Sometimes people say comfortable. That is a subjective term that means something different to everyone. Let's just call it adequate. I know that I would like to have an adequate retirement, and here's the target that I need to meet to get there. That's not a bad thing, to plan like that. But to go beyond that, and when it becomes a fear that takes over, then you lose control of that, right? Then the perspective is lost. So yeah, nothing wrong with a rainy day fund or a contingency savings, but when fear gets in the way, then it's no longer a rainy day fund. Now it starts to become a doomsday stockpile, and that can never be enough. So I have to grab everything. A fear of the unknown makes me grab and hang on to everything I can and bury all the treasure that I have and not let go of any of it because of a fear. All right? So that's the second one. How about a third one here? And this one may be closer for many of us. What about a fear of loss? A fear of what I lose? Last year when I was here for Thanksgiving, it was the first time I was back in Michigan for Thanksgiving in over a decade. And it came with the curveball of having to leave the house. Something that for a decade of living in Denver, my family had never done. What do you mean leave the house on Thanksgiving? What do you mean go to church on Thanksgiving? What do you mean go have dinner when gather with somebody else and do all that? That was something we had never done before. So last year when we were here for Thanksgiving Day, we had the opportunity to start our Thanksgiving Day by gathering with our church family and celebrating Thanksgiving together. A wonderful opportunity that we had not done in over a decade. Right? We had the opportunity to gather with extended family and share a big meal gathered with others, an opportunity that had not been there for over a decade. But I have to admit, it came with a loss. Those were things that came with a loss. A loss of having a Thanksgiving Day where, you know what, I can just stay home with my wife and my kids, and we could experience something like a true Sabbath rest for an entire day together. I had to let go of that to gain the new. Let go of some cherished family tradition that I had developed for a decade in order to press into new opportunity, new ways to spend that holiday. Sometimes a fear of loss gets in the way, right? I don't want to let that go. I don't want to let go of what has always been for me. I don't want to let go of something that's cherished. So I'm not going to give or use what I have in my time or my resources or my availability to look ahead because I don't want to lose what I've already had behind me. How often do we do that? How often are we afraid to leave what's behind in order to give our generosity to what's ahead? That there's this fear of loss that gets in the way. Sometimes even our generosity can skew in that direction, right? Sometimes I think of the ways that I give, and my motivations for giving are to preserve what used to be. You know, I'm going to give to something as long as it's turning the clock back or preserving what used to be or holding on to something I don't want to let go of instead of giving in ways that help look ahead to what Jesus is bringing, to what God is doing, to the kingdom that is becoming in our world around us. at our generosity fails to look forward because I'm afraid to lose what I already have, what I'm hanging on to. Three examples there, three examples of the way that a fear can get in the way of our stewardship and lead us to bury treasure. But the story, the message of the gospel is that we don't have to be afraid, right? I don't need fear. I don't have to bury my treasure because I don't have to live in fear. That we live with a God who is faithful. That we have a God who loves us and his faithfulness will never let go. Right? That there is never so far that I can stray from God that he can't pull me back. There is never such a dry and empty spell of God's love in my life that there's nothing I can give, that there's nothing I can return. There is never a space like that in our lives. There is never a space where anyone that God has ever created is a throwaway, spent up, used up, dry, worthless, gone, done. You've got nothing to give. No one is that far away from God. God has loved and has blessed every single person that he has created in different ways. In ways that when I start comparing it to others, maybe I'm not always the five bags of gold kind of guy, but there's still always something which God has given, which God has blessed me with. And because he loves us extravagantly enough to give us the blessings of new life in him, I don't have to be afraid. I don't need that fear that keeps me hanging on, that keeps my treasure buried. But I can share. I can let that go. I can be one who gives to the fullest potential of what God has given to me, because he will use that for his kingdom. Let's pray together. God, thank you for the message of your word. Thank you for the ways that you do take what we have. God, we confess and we're sorry for the times when we have buried treasure. We have to admit we've all done that, that we've all taken the things that you've given us and we've all found times and places where we keep that to ourselves and bury that away. Lord, help us then, instead of hanging on and burying what you've given to us, instead of being consumed by the fears that go along with that, to rest in you and to be able to use what you've given us so that your kingdom may thrive and flourish and grow here in our community, among us, and around the world. We pray this in the name of Jesus. Amen.
Would you please stand?